This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Ladies and gentlemen, God bless you and good afternoon. This is not Thursday, but we're doing a special edition of Thursday Coast. So much happening, and it's happening everywhere. And obviously, all of us are, well, many of us are full of anxiety. Everybody's calling me. Most.
Oh my God. Mark, my phone, it's out of control.
But wait a minute. So because I'm a minister, I'm doing most of the counseling I'm doing is around this. Even for people who have more serious matters that they need counseling for, and I'm like, shouldn't we be talking about that other situation you're in? And they're like, no, I won't.
I am not a minister, and people want me to make them feel better. They literally call me up and say, make me feel better.
Right. So, you know, folks are literally losing their mind. And to be honest with you, we were chatting before we went live, folks. Some of it, a lot of it is PTSD from 2016. Because we knew, as crazy as that dude was talking, there was no way. Just last night, he said he's going to put RFK Jr. over top of women's health care, women's health. That is insane. And he was saying stuff like that in 2016 and won somehow. So, and then plus also people are afraid of the trick. People have anxiety about the Supreme Court. We'll get into all that. So you go first. What do you, so when I'm counseling people, I say, listen, the numbers look good. I quote you a lot. I say, listen, we're okay. Just take a deep breath. But from your point of view, Marcos, what are you saying to people and how are you feeling on this last weekend? Lord have mercy.
So, Mark, I think you forgot to introduce me. Oh. I think we just jumped in. There's so much to talk about.
Well, everybody, I know, everybody knows. And we're off anyway. It's an off day. So that shows you we tripped even in our stools. The founder and publisher of the largest online progressive community, DailyCoast.com, as well as the founder of Civics with a Q. They have great numbers and pretty much the largest sample size of people polled every day versus a lot of these other polls that we see, many of which are junk polls. We'll get into that. Marcos Melitzas joins us from the Bay Area. All right. So there you are.
There we go. You have a system. I just want to make sure you're working within your system.
I'm not working within my system today, obviously.
How are things?
and still honestly traumatized from what the Yankees did the other night. The worst collapse. Don't laugh, Martin. We just got to talk about counseling. He's cracked. I hope you don't laugh at people when other people call you.
Oh, man, it's terrible. It's terrible.
The worst collapse in the history of the whole 150-year World Series. So we won't even get it. I don't even know what. It's horrible. But yeah, this is it, man.
It's coming.
This is it.
Coming.
This
4 days.
The last week.
Yeah. Well, 4 days plus today is all that is left. So here's where we are, Mark. We are. Nobody really knows. I mean, that's just the bottom line. We know that we could have a 300 plus electoral victory for Kamala Harris, or we can have one for Donald Trump. There is an assumption that is made that polling error automatically helps Trump and Republicans, but it didn't in 2022, right? Polling error actually was in Democrats' favor. Pollsters really don't know how to model this electorate, and it's actually a lot safer just to say it's tied. And so that's why every poll is 49-48. It doesn't matter if Harris is up or if Donald Trump is up, 49-48, 50-49. That's what the polling says. And I don't doubt that you can you can craft the poll to show those numbers. Now, we've talked about this before, but I just want to stress it because a lot of people maybe still don't fully understand this.
Yeah.
Polling is not a science. Polling is an art. And so a pollster can tell you pretty accurately that a white male in Alabama is going to be 77% Republican, 10% Democrat, right? Like that's, it can tell you numbers like that. I mean, I can, you know, point to a state, point to a demographic. I can tell you how they're going to vote. That is the easy part. The hard part is how do you guess who turns out to vote? Are more young people going to turn out to vote? Is the electorate going to be more heavily Black? Are more women? Donald Trump's people, they're banking on young conservative incel type bros to be their sort of their hidden vote, their growth potential. Are they going to turn out? There is no way for a pollster to know this beforehand. Literally impossible, right? So what you're doing is you're making educated guesses.
Okay.
And you have a whole universe of right-aligned conservative pollsters who are literally designed to shape the narrative, the media narratives, and the aggregates. And they're making assumptions on electorate that's going to be more white or more male or older. And then you have pollsters that are trying to do a good job, and they're looking at history. They're looking at, okay, what happened in 2020? What happened in 2022? And are trying to model an electorate that they hope is what turns out. But they don't know. Nobody knows. And so it's kind of a bit of a thankless task, to be honest. It's really easy for a pollster to say, okay, the American people think that we should pass Affordable Care Act. That's easy. What percentage of people actually turn out to an election? Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? So this is why there's that much uncertainty, right? So everybody's saying, like, the polling shows everything is tied. If you have a polling error towards Trump, okay, then he wins all the battleground states because they're all within 1.5 points of each other in the polling aggregate. Same thing on the other side. If the polling is underestimating the female vote or the crossover Republican vote, or the suburban vote, or the young women vote, that could be a major, major victory for Kamala Harris, right? So that's where we at. And so what I like to say, which is true, is that we are within the margin of turnout. The election is within the margin of turnout, which really means within the margins of our effort. Who is working harder to turn out our vote? You look at Donald Trump. Donald Trump is talking to Tucker Carlson. He's talking to Fox News. He ain't getting the vote out. He is talking to the same old people, same old people. Kamala Harris is working to expand her reach. So there's part that is message. Two, Kamala Harris has a focus message. She's talking about the economy. She's drilling on the economy. It's almost everything. Abortion, economy, and democracy. Donald Trump, I don't know. Today he's talking about executing Liz Cheney, right? So he's all over the place. He's unfocused. And you can see this quite dramatically just in the quality of the rallies, right? Like Trump's rallies are half attended. People are leaving early. There's no energy. Harris's rallies, and not just Harris's rallies, but Tim Walz's rallies and Obama and Michelle, everybody is out there doing their thing for Kamala. Those rallies are like full of energy and joy, and people are dancing and,
right.
And that you may think, oh, who cares if it's just a rally? But here's the thing. Gallup just released a poll that showed that 77% of Democrats are more excited than usual to turn out and vote. That is 10 points higher than Republicans. We're at 67%. That matters because, again, that's part of an enthusiastic vote matters just as much as an unenthusiastic vote. But that enthusiastic vote is calling people, knocking on doors, making sure their friends and family are getting out to vote. They're doing the things that they need to do to win the election. And on that theme, Kamala Harris has what is widely considered at this point to be the largest get out the vote operation in American political history.
Mm.
Donald Trump doesn't have one. Literally does not have a, they fired their GOTV people. They were going to have Charlie Kirk do GOTV. He flamed out. He was unable to do it. So then Elon Musk, 5 weeks ago, came in and said, all right, I guess I'll take it up. you don't build a GOTV operation in 5 weeks. There's stories about how they have these young black men knocking on doors or paying them. They're GOTV is not done by people who are just dropping lit or like you want people who actually care. That's why volunteers are the backbone of any GOTV operation. Not a bunch of kids who don't care about the campaign and they're just trying to make some money. So they are not in a place of strength right now. They being the Republicans and Donald Trump. Whatever the polls say, the actual reality on the ground is where the energy is. It's all on our side, objectively. It's not hope, objective. Now, is there a hidden, is the hidden Trump vote, these young bros, will they turn out and vote? Maybe, but Mark, they haven't turned out yet. We can see in the early vote that of of all voters, early voters in the battleground states, only 1.5% of them are men 18 to 29. And of those, no, that's not true, 3%. And of those, half are Democrats, are registered Democrats. So only 1.5% of the entire early vote, and the early vote right now is half. Half the votes have been cast. 1.5%. They are about six, young men are about 8% of the overall population. 18, 20, 29. In 2020, there were 8% of the electorate were young men, 18 to 29. Right now, young Republicans are 1.5%. They are dramatically underperforming. Now they're young. They may turn out on election day. Who knows, right? But Mark, we've been talking about elections for a long time. I've always said, if you're depending on young people to win an election, you're in real trouble. And historically, that has been Democrats. So it kind of feels kind of funny to me that so all of a sudden, it is Republicans that are depending on the lowest turnout demographic. And I got to say, young women, they're showing up. They're showing up in the early vote. They're showing up in large numbers. These young men, I mean, they got nothing on the line, right? What are they fighting for?
Only thing I can think of is stopping women from having governance bodies. But
yeah, and I even think those young men don't care about that.
Yeah, how passionate
are
they really about that? I think I just saw I'll find it before we go, but there was even another article about Trump fatigue on their side. You know, where did I see that? I'll pull it up in a second. But so now, but so let's drill down a little bit more. You had an impressive number before we came on. Oh, hold it. Let me not get ahead of myself. I want everybody listening because I was just in a text thread with some friends and they were saying to me that they're in Michigan, they're seeing Trump signs everywhere. And they also confirmed what you said about them paying young black men, as I froze, I'll fix myself. But about them paying young black men, talk to us about that. What does that mean? And those signs, I mean, people see signs, but that's, like you said, that's not a real ground game.
No, signs aren't a real ground game. And Michigan is 50%, 47% Republican, right? So you're going to see half the state blanketed in Republican signs. So that's not a big surprise. Oh, looks like I'm still alive. It's not a big surprise that Republicans are going to be, they're going to be heavily represented. But really what we're talking about on the ground game is the idea that Democrats are using volunteers and those volunteers are motivated because they're true believers. They're active. They're Democrats. They're passionate. They want to see their team win. And Republicans never did the work of building that on their side, right? So Elon Musk comes in and he's been told, oh, you got to knock on some doors. And so, okay, how are we going to knock on some doors? It's 4 or 5 weeks from the election. They don't have time to build a volunteer corps and build a tech infrastructure and all those things because it just literally does not exist. So then Donald Trump or Elon Musk says, all right, we'll just hire canvassers. So they go out and they hire, just like they hire people to collect petition signatures or to fundraise for Greenpeace or whatever. You hire a bunch of people and then you get them to go knock on doors and hand out literature, probably. I don't know what else you're doing. I mean, it's not like these kids can do. And Wired Magazine had a great article about how they're being mistreated, how they're being lied to, they're not being paid. I mean, it's a big cluster F. But so you have these kids that are supposedly the ground game, and that's not what a ground game is. It's basically Elon Musk just burning money, lighting money on fire. It's redistribution of wealth. I actually support that. Like, you know, get some money out of Elon Musk's hands and wherever else it may go, it's a better place. But there is no real sign of a actual broad-based ground game. Now, I will say that Republicans do have their evangelicals. Like, those guys are doing their work in their community, but they're not out like knocking on doors beyond that, right? They're working their network, and that's a very powerful network, and they vote, and they don't care about the hypocrisy about supporting somebody like Donald Trump, who's just a moral degenerate. But beyond the Faith and Family Coalition, the evangelical base, like, it really isn't the ground game. And now, is that gonna win or lose the election on its own? No, but if it's actually a 50-50 race, a ground game can be worth between 1 and 3 points. And usually they offset each other, but you don't have a Republican ground game to offset the Democratic one. That by itself, even if it's worth 1 point, if the race is actually tied 50-50, like the polls say, then that would be determinative. So when you look at just all these sort of individual factors, it really looks... everything's looking good for Kamala. So in Georgia, right, you have this ground game absolutely kicking ass. You alluded to something we had talked about earlier, so I'll just mention that now. You have a ground game that is firing in all cylinders, getting people out to vote. This is one of the most amazing statistics. In the Georgia early vote, 20% of the voters are first-time voters. 20%. A fifth of all early votes, and usually early votes, people who have just registered to vote, they don't necessarily generally vote early. They vote on election day. They're voting early. In 2020 in Georgia, 13% of all voters were first-time voters. So you had a massive influx. And most of that is probably going to be younger voters. It's going to be women who didn't vote before. Maybe there's a hidden trench of Trump voters that have come out of the woodwork that didn't activate the last two cycles. It's always in the realm of possibility, but I would be very, very, very surprised. And again, so you have all these factors. You look at all this data, you're going, like, in every battleground state, women are performing men by 10 points, 55-45 in every battleground state in the early vote. Women are fired up. Women at this point are a 60-40 Democratic constituency, right? So you look at all these numbers, and even these Republican women, I'm not quite convinced that a lot of them are going to be voting, all of them are going to be voting for Trump. I think there's a lot of Nikki Haley Republican women that are going to be crossing over. And in fact, the Washington Post just had a poll that said 1 in 8 women, Republican women, have voted secretly against what their husbands voted for. So, and, you know, no Democratic woman has to hide her vote from a Democratic man. It's not a thing, right? So,
right, well, 1 in 8 women or 1 in 8 Republican women?
1 in 8. I just saw it before we came on, so I'd have to.
Okay, I'll look for it. Okay,
but I think it was 1 in 8 women, but I'm maybe misremembering the fine print. But you have all these factors. And so when I look at, like, okay, what are the factors that mean that we're going to, you know, that decide who's going to win or lose the race? Like the polling, Kamala Harris has the very, very, very slight edge. The ground game is 100% Kamala Harris. Message discipline, the issues, very much Kamala Harris. So what is the argument for Donald Trump winning? And Mark, the only argument I can think of for Donald Trump winning, and it's a very powerful argument, I'm not going to lie, but the only argument I can think of Donald Trump winning is 2016 happened. That's it. So much had to go right for Donald Trump to win in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And so does that exist now? Kamala Harris is not Hillary Clinton, doesn't have the baggage. There's no Comey letter. In fact, it's the opposite. Right now, it is Donald Trump who's having to deal with insulting Puerto Ricans And today, you know, shooting, you know, his fantasy about assassinating Liz Cheney. This is not the same environment. You don't have Democrats who are underestimating Trump, thinking that he's a big joke and nobody would ever vote for him. Like, now we are very aware of the challenge we have in this country, where half of us actually think it's acceptable for somebody like Donald Trump to be president. We're no longer wearing those blinders. Things are different now, and we are just quite simply out hustling them. So I am very confident that we're going to win on Tuesday, assuming that nobody lets a foot off the gas, that we all work hard all the way through the weekend. And then on Tuesday, if anybody's close to any battleground state, any battleground district, you're out there doing what you need to do to make sure that Kamala Harris and our endangered Senate Democrats, and in Texas and Florida, our Democratic challengers in Nebraska, independent challenger, that they're all working hard to get the vote out for our people, because there's so much on the line and we do have to out hustle them.
Okay. So let's talk about, it is 1 in 8 women overall.
Okay.
1 in 8 women. And it's interesting that people still have to vote secretly from their spouses. I guess that's the way some relationships are. The article also says 1 in 10 men have done the same. So some of y'all living with each other and doing interesting things. But, I don't know. But let's talk about some specific states. You mentioned Georgia. That looks good. Michigan.
Michigan looks... Georgia's pretty tied. Georgia's tough. There's a lot of positive signs, but the turnout in the rural counties in Georgia right now are lagging. So we definitely need to see. Hopefully Sunday we get sold to the polls on Sunday, and that we get that big turnout on Tuesday. So that's the one... kind of worry right now in Georgia, because in the Atlanta area counties, looking good. It's the rural south. What is that? Southwest. The southwest counties, rural black counties. We need that turnout to gin up. Michigan is.
Let me just let you know this: the weather forecast is 80 degrees Tuesday. Yes. It has not been that high since 2008.
Wow.
So just want everybody to know it's going to be nice. No, a lot of people come up with excuses. Weather, it's going to be beautiful in North Carolina. Everywhere, it's going to be beautiful day Tuesday. No excuse. Okay, go ahead.
All right. I'm going to lump in Michigan with Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. That's what everybody's calling the blue wall. And there is, Mark, there's something happening in those upper Midwest states. We're seeing it also in Ohio and in Iowa, which Trump's going to win. But the margins in those states are looking, in polling right now, are looking a lot tighter than they did in 2020. So there does seem to be about a 2 to 3 point shift leftward in that entire upper Midwest, that Rust Belt area. And if that pans out, then Harris wins, probably wins Wisconsin and Michigan fairly safely.
Okay.
3 to 4 points. Well outside of the range of any Trump shenanigans. And in Pennsylvania, it's looking a little tighter, but I'm looking at Pennsylvania being 2 to 3 points Harris, which again would pull it out of the range of shenanigans. That those three states plus Omaha, which Harris is running away with it. She may win it by double digits. That right there is 270. So that's victory right there. No, and I'd say, like, we want more states because we want to get it outside the range of Trump shenanigans, right? But those three states and Omaha is victory. And I'll even say that everybody's assuming that Trump is going to win. There's a congressional district in Maine that is right-leaning that everybody assumes Trump is going to win. I'm not making that assumption. Like, at this point, the polling in that district for the House race is looking so good that I actually think that Harris may pull it off. And in that case, she'd be at 271 electoral votes.
Now, okay, so that's That's important. That's good. So you had said that some time ago, you felt confident about Michigan and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And then if that happened, she would need North Carolina, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona, any two of those states, and not need Pennsylvania. But you actually feel confident about Pennsylvania.
I'm feeling pretty good about Pennsylvania. Trump has actually canceled events in Pennsylvania. He and J.D. Vance are doing four events in North Carolina this weekend. I don't think that's a good sign for him. It sounds to me like they're sort of giving up on PA and really heavily going all in on North Carolina. And I'm not quite sure I understand that math, but he's also spending time in Virginia. And yesterday Trump was in New Mexico. So he's not the most... He's not the most rational person, and it's clear that he calls the shots. Like, his staff doesn't have any control over him.
How is she looking in North Carolina?
North Carolina is by all indications, it's tied. And I would say there's a lot of people that are saying, "Oh, everybody's hurting me." Like, all the pollsters are going saying it's a tied race, because then it doesn't matter who wins, right? Like, you win either way because you said it's tied. I don't think it's hurting. I think it is actually tied. I mean, Trump won it by about a point last time. He won it in 2016 by 3, won it by 1 in 2020. And so it's trending leftward little by little. So there's that. And I actually think the hurricane devastating the rural West may be a real problem for them, because that's a big source of votes for them, and people were displaced. And Republicans have made it harder for those displaced voters to vote outside of their home districts. I mean, Democrats are going to make it easier, because that's what we try to do. We try to make voting easier. And Republicans, because they're so fixated on fictional voter fraud, they block that. And you have to assume a lot of those displaced people are out of state too.
Yeah.
Right. They may be in family in Kentucky and in South Carolina and in Virginia. So that in itself may be worth half point. I mean, Republicans are so freaked out about it that, what was that Freedom Caucus guy? One of the congressmen that represents out there was demanding that the legislature just grant North Carolina's electoral votes to Trump without even an election.
Yeah,
because those people displaced by the hurricane were being disenfranchised, he claimed. I mean, this is how crazy they are. So I feel good about North Carolina, but I actually do think if we win North Carolina, it's going to be by a sliver. I think either side, whoever wins, it's not going to be by a lot.
All right.
And then Arizona and Nevada the early vote in Nevada is looking terrible for us. Like, absolutely. Republicans are 5 points ahead. It could be that they've just shifted their election day vote to early vote, and our vote shifted to election day vote. Nobody knows. But right now, it's not looking anywhere. That's probably our worst looking state. It's also the least important state of them. It's six electoral votes. The math is, it would be a very funky situation where Nevada actually decides the situation. So if we can lose one of those states, it's Nevada. Arizona, I'd like to win. It's the polling is 50-50. I believe it, because it was 50-50 in 2020. You know, Biden didn't win it by much. And I suspect we're going to see much of the same. And Arizona is kind of an interesting state, because it's actually gained 40,000 Republicans from migration, California Republicans leaving California and moving to Arizona. And so they've actually gained Republicans just via migration. So got to offset that. And the way you offset that with Latinos who don't vote very well. And hopefully Ruben Gallego, who's running for Senate, is actually helping draw some of that Latino vote out.
What about his race? Is he going to win?
Yeah, he's going to win. All the polling shows him pretty comfortably winning.
So it's a possibility Republicans in Arizona will split the ticket.
Yeah, we're, and Yeah, we're seeing that in a lot of states where there's a handful. So we need that to happen in Texas for Colin Allred to have a chance. We need to see that happen in Florida. We're definitely going to see it in Maryland. I don't think it's going to affect at the end of the day, but I think the Republican governor, Hogan, who's running for Senate, is going to get more votes than Trump. He's going to lose. But so there is some ticket splitting. We definitely want to see it in Nebraska, where Trump is going to win by 15 points. So if the independent Dan Osborne, who would caucus with the Democrats, if he is to, if he has any chance of winning, you're going to have to see a massive, massive undervote in Senate race and then ticket splitters as well.
Yeah.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
The House.
I like our chances in the House. And this is one of the things that has been really vexing as we look at polling. Because if you look at district-level polls in some of these House races, like this Maine 2nd Congressional District, Democrats are doing really, really well. They're ahead in a lot of Republican districts. And so it's hard to see how the House polling is correct and the presidential polling is correct. And the House polling is you're looking at a smaller subset of people, right? But like in Iowa, right, you have Democrats doing really well in two Republican-held districts. If that's the case, the math indicates that Iowa should be a lot more blue than it, you know, a lot less red than it actually is. And if that's the case, then, and this is what I'm talking about, like in the Midwest, you're seeing sort of this 2-point shift to the left that is showing up in a lot of polls that may not be showing up on the last, you know, just pick any random Michigan poll that says 49-49, right? Like there is a leftward shift. And if you look at some of the House districts in Michigan, same thing's happening. They look further left than the statewide totals would suggest. So there's a lot of sort of disparity between the House polls, a lot of the Senate polls, and the presidential polls. You just alluded, are people going to split their votes as much as people say they will? I mean, it would help us more often than not. Like Ohio's another one, right? We need people to split the votes so Sherrod Brown will survive. Montana, we need people to split votes. So let's hope there's a lot more split voters. But a lot of that polling is very confusing and seemingly contradictory. So we'll know in 4 days, Mark, which batch of polls was right. It's tough right now to really get a good handle on where things are.
Do you remember us having as much anxiety in 2020?
Yes, because so much was on the line. So much, and again, it was the polls look good. You know, field was different because of COVID, right? But the polls look good, the messaging looked good. Trump was losing his mind. You know, he had just presided over a terrible presidency. Unemployment was rising, inflation was rising, and our argument was like, well, 2016, he pulled it off, and Trump did overperform the polling in 2020, which is why people just assume he's done it twice. They assume he'll do it again, but pollsters have adjusted.
Yeah.
And I will say, even these Republican pollsters with their thumbs on a scale who are making, you know, delivering better numbers for Trump than anybody else, I actually don't really hate that much because, good, if it pushes the polling aggregates and then nobody gets... Yeah, it's just whatever. It just
keeps us motivated.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need that to be motivated, but some people do. So great. Okay,
yeah. So because we can't, because again, in 2016, we thought we had it. We knew we had it and did not have it.
Yeah.
What was the thinking?
In 16?
No. The Puerto Rican comment.
Oh.
So this community seemingly has responded.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of questions about why did that break through? 9 years of Trump saying the worst things. Why did that break through? I actually wrote a story about it, Mark.
Yes.
It broke through for a couple big reasons. One is Trump didn't say it. Had Trump said it, it'd just be part of his word salad and everybody would shrug it off and be like, oh, that's Trump being Trump, as though that excuses all the racism. So that was a big factor. Number two is, you notice in that joke, in scare quotes, in that joke, he attacked Puerto Ricans, he attacked Latinos, he attacked Black people, he attacked Jews, he attacked Palestinians, right?
Right.
Only the Puerto Rican one broke through.
Right.
And so I will say, you don't mess with Puerto Ricans. It is a rabidly proud, very strong love for the Puerto Rican identity. And they are different than other Latinos in a very crucial way. And that is that most Latino communities, it's an immigrant community, obviously. I mean, obviously there's Latinos in New Mexico that have been here since the time of the Spaniards. But generally speaking, it's a very young immigrant community. Most of us come from regions, we're here because of oppression and repression. Places where being politically active meant you were murdered. These communities are also very heavily undocumented, right? So there is a ethos of keep your head down, don't make noise. If you don't make a scene, they will leave you alone. Puerto Ricans don't have that. They don't need it. They're American citizens. They can come and go to the mainland whenever they want. So they don't have that fear of having their community attacked or deported or targeted. And you see it even like,
and we have to be quiet because of it. They're not suppressed.
Yeah, exactly. And you even see it like, for those of you who are old enough, like Seinfeld, when they had the episode on Seinfeld where they're making fun of the Puerto Rican Pride Parade, right? And it was like massive protests of NBC at the, like, Puerto Rican community, you don't fuck with the Puerto Rican community. And that's what this guy did. And so then you look at the quality of their stars, right? J-Lo and Bad Bunny and you just down the list, Luis Fonsi, and like, it's massive, right? So this, I was watching the rally, and as soon as he said that, like everything else, he's talking about Black people and carving watermelons and all these fucking racist jokes. The Puerto Rican stuff, I was like, that one's landing. Like, I wrote a story right away because I was like, This is it. This is going to hit. Like, they have no idea how this is going to hit. And it was really funny seeing these white conservatives being like, oh, this story's dead. While on the other hand, like, for the entire week, it was the top story in Univision, on Telemundo, and all the Spanish language newspapers. It was literally the top story. There was even a story about this Latina Puerto Rican in Georgia who voted for Trump, who went back to the polling place and demanded to get her ballot back so she can cast a different vote. It's like, no, that's not how it works. And they had Nicky Jam, who's a reggaeton star, who endorsed Trump and was on a rally. And it was funny because Trump said, oh, you guys know Nicky Jam? She's really hot. And this dude walks up.
Dude, right, I remember that. Right, it was a dude.
Yeah, Nicky Jam is a dude. He's a rapper, reggaeton star, and he just unendorsed Trump and endorsed Kamala Harris, right? So it's a major, major thing. There are enough Puerto Ricans in all the battleground states. I don't have numbers in front of me, but I think it's 400,000 in Philadelphia alone.
That's right.
You know, it's, you know, over 100,000 in Georgia. They're in Madison and Milwaukee. They're in Michigan and Detroit. Like,
they are.
And Trump can't apologize, right? So, you know, his whole response, I don't know that guy, I don't know who brought him in, I have nothing to do with him. Well, you have something to do with him, he was at your rally. But he's incapable of saying, like, yeah, that was awful. Like,
right.
That does not represent me. I love Puerto Ricans. I throw paper towels at you. Like, I love you all. But he can't do that. Like, he cannot, like, he is constitutionally incapable of apologizing. And so that helped fuel the story as well, because his campaign set does not reflect the campaign. And everybody's like, okay, great, let's hear Trump say it. And everybody knew Trump was never going to say it.
No.
And then you had, which Democrats do it too much, but Republicans had to in this case, is when they start criticizing. Like when the press loves like party on party violence. So Rick Scott, who has over a million Puerto Ricans in Florida, I mean, he's already like, the Haitian community is already pissed off and agitated. Now you got Puerto Ricans in Florida. He's got over a million of them in Florida. And he had to come out and say like, yeah, I that was messed up. I disagree with that. Right. And then you had a bunch of Republican House members who are also in districts with large Puerto Rican communities. So they had to come out. So once it became a Republican criticizes Republican story, that also provided fuel for the story. And finally, and this doesn't happen enough, Mark, Kamala Harris called a press conference and called it out.
Yep, she sure did.
Like, there's so many times where we're like, why isn't the press covering this? And it's because Democrats don't do it, right? Don't say anything. Like, Trump is always like, that's why people are like, Trump said this. What do you think about that? And they're like, oh, well, Trump is setting the agenda. And it's true. But she can do that too. Democrats right. can also criticize. So then the press goes to Donald Trump and say, well, Kamala Harris says this. What do you think about that? And we, for whatever reason, Democrats don't like to do that. We just assume that the media is going to pick up on these issues because it's the right thing to do. And then they don't because they just want to be told what to cover. Like, no one actually had to do it on their own because then it's biased. Like if they pick up a theme, they're like, oh, we're being biased. But if they're saying Kamala Harris said this, then they're just reporting the news. There needs to be more of that.
So Puerto Rico, unlike this, so Puerto Rico and the other territories, which include Guam, the U.S., Virgin Islands, folks, and the Northern Mariana Islands, do not have electoral votes because they are an American Samoa. Their residents are U.S. nationals rather than citizens, but they can't vote. Now, in the District of Columbia, the 23rd Amendment in 1961 is the only so-called territory that has electoral votes. Now, we've been fighting for D.C. statehood. Some have advocated for Puerto Rican statehood. If it was up to me, get sworn in on January 20th at noon. As soon as you take your hand off the Bible, skip the speech, go in the chamber and admit District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, the Virgin Islands, and Northern Mariana and American Samoa all as states. Now, Marcos and I usually say two of them, D.C. and Puerto Rico. But I'm like, what the hell? Let's do it all for everybody. And then it'll really be a wrap. And everybody will get two senators. And
Samoa would be Republican. Just wanna American Samoa. It's not as if we're gonna play. Yeah, it's not exactly that easy. But absolutely, Puerto Rico or definitely D.C. And I suspect it actually will happen if we can hold the Senate. If we perform this miracle and hold the Senate, then I think D.C. statehood is a wrap. Puerto Rico, they're having a referendum on Tuesday on statehood.
Another one?
Yeah, but this one, I mean, they're all sort of. This one is an up and down on statehood.
Okay, because so in the past, they had three things on the ballot: status quo, statehood, and independence. And what happens is, independence and statehood compete with each other. Together, they're the majority always. People vote for either independence or statehood. But if it's straight up down statehood, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, and last time it was boycotted by one of the sides for reasons that I don't even remember. But this is the first one where it's like, this is like, we're taking this seriously. Everybody's taking it seriously. It's and obviously they don't get to say, but I always like to say Puerto Rico statehood if they want it. Like, let's just make sure that this is a colonial world. Like, they get to decide if they want to be a state. But if they say yes, and they probably will, I suspect, then absolutely.
Especially now. Yeah. They want to be a state now so they can kick Donald Trump.
Absolutely. So it would radically transform. And then at that point, then we push for expanding the Supreme Court. And then we can actually get somewhere into saving our American democracy, which right now is absolutely broken. And it's fundamentally structurally built to support a conservative movement that is becoming a smaller and smaller minority.
The Supreme Court, to your point, is broken, perhaps irrevocably. I mean, I never thought, and this, maybe I'm late to the party, but I was reading Ellie Mistel's piece in The Nation, folks, where he reveals, Trump says, we got a secret. We got a big secret. We won't tell you about it. So apparently the secret is to get some of the Republican states, or states that are led by Republican legislatures and or governors, to not certify their electors, which would then bring forth a certain reading of the Constitution, a majority of electors, a majority of electors from every state. It doesn't say that. It just says a majority of electors. So would it then be a majority of those who show up and who are certified? And so that's the game they're going to play. The Supreme Court, which is reverse Roe, which is reversed immunity, not even for Nixon. And I think, as I said, for those reasons, you know, that we owe Nixon a national apology. He never had to leave. He would have never had to have left. He could have stayed. I don't put it past them to say, oh, this is interesting. Yeah, it doesn't say a majority of electors from every state. It just says a majority. So if only 10 electors show up, whoever gets those 10 is entitled to be the president of the United States. So that's the trick.
And you know what's terrifying? Yeah, is that the Supreme Court just allowed Virginia to purge non-voters, quote unquote, against federal law. Federal law says you can't do that 90 days from an election. The Supreme Court just allowed it to happen without even bothering to explain the reason why. Shadow docket. They're not even pretending, because there's no way you justify that. This is a court that claims that they're going to be all about, you know, deference to the legislature, and the legislature could not be more clear. And without any comment, they just overturned, they just allowed that purge that objectively, admittedly, has caught up actual citizens and people that should be allowed to vote. So it is an incredibly dangerous Supreme Court. They should be worried, though, because if Democrats win, I think the energy is there to kick it up to 13. One Supreme Court justice for every circuit, for every district, every appeals court. But there's 13. When there was nine appeals courts. Now there's 13. There should be 13 judges. So there is energy for that. There's energy for term limits. There's energies for a ethics policy for the Supreme Court, which right now they do whatever they want. It's going to be a lot different up in that court if Democrats can win. So there's a lot riding on the line. So they are very motivated to make sure that Democrats don't win. So we have to win this thing outside the margin of the steal. And really, we need the Senate, guys. Like, we need to work our ass off to win. Like, that Texas Senate seat, it's winnable. The Florida one, it's winnable. The Montana, John Tester's not out. Everybody's assuming he's like dead on arrival. He's not. It's within the margin of hustle. Just got to work harder than they are.
I like it.
So there is a lot on the line, because we can be talking about statehood and expanding the court and doing all sorts of great stuff, or we're going to be sitting here going like, okay, even if Kamala wins, nothing going to happen because Republicans are going to have the Senate. We only need that for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Folks, this is it. This is the weekend. I am headed back to North Carolina as we speak.
Yes.
As we sign off, I'm hitting the road. And we want to get this vote out of North Carolina. We want to get it out everywhere. I'm hearing from people in Michigan that Detroit is turning out. And if Detroit turns out between now and Tuesday.
Oh, Detroit is turning. Milwaukee is turning out big time.
That's in the early vote. Detroit, Atlanta, Milwaukee, these big urban centers, Philly, I've got colleagues. Uncho Freedom is going to be on the ground in Philly tomorrow. Woke Vote and Black Voters Matter. I'll be joining Black Voters Matter on the ground in Durham tomorrow and Wilmington Sunday. Woke Vote and Black Voters Matter on the ground in North Carolina. So everybody's, Black Voters Matter obviously is also in their home base in Georgia.
Nice.
So people are getting as mobilized, you know, I think J-Lo hit at just the right time, hearing from her. And you're right, the Puerto Ricans do have a lot of pride. So folks, you know,
Mark, I don't know if you saw, but the Mehdi Hasan clip where on CNN where he was, that I was seeing a lot of Muslim Americans and Arab Americans were saying that was their Puerto Rico, where that was spreading like wildfire, and suddenly people were deciding to vote for Harris too. So there is a lot of last minute realization what the stakes are, and gotta work hard, guys. You feeling nervous about the election? Make some calls. Feeling nervous? Go to a battleground state near you, battleground district, nearest campaign office. Just volunteer. Do the work you need to do.
You can do something. I'm really not feeling nervous. For some reason, I feel very confident. I just do. I feel very faithful about it. I it's just so much positivity out here. I'm even more than I think we saw Hillary Clinton. And again, the difference is, what do we always say? Once bitten, twice shy. Yeah. So, you know, people know what happened in 2016. Most of the people voting do.
Mm-hmm.
Even the young people who were just voting for the first time, they were around, but they get it.
Oh, Mark, I don't know if you know this, but the grab them by the pussy clip is viral on TikTok right now.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, the Zoomers have discovered it, and it's spreading like wildfire.
Good. That needs that. So here's an article. Franklin Foer in the Atlantic. How the Trump resistance gave up. This year is nothing like 2020, and a collective sense of resignation might make all the difference. So yeah, there may not be all this there that they hope to be there. Women have decided favorably every election since the overturning of Roe. We should keep it this way. Women, if you all do everything you need to do, white women especially.
No, white women.
White women. We know what black women gonna do.
No, they got it.
Nobody else gonna do.
Latina's got it too. Like they know what's up. White women.
J-Lo was strong last night. Got emotional, as a matter of fact. This is it.
Yeah.
This is it, y'all. Otherwise, you know.
And all those white women, you don't need to let your husband know who you voted for. You can lie.
Yeah. You don't have to.
Yeah.
You're same for your daughters.
Mm-hmm.
We know when this is a real shot to have every other civilized, industrialized, modernized country in the world, even some who we consider less civilized and modernized than ours, have elected women. It's no thing.
Pakistan.
Yes.
I mean, Muslim countries who, No, it can, it's okay.
It's no thing. But here it's like, this is your opportunity, and then everything changes. Everything changes. January 20th. Now here's something interesting. This would be kind of hip, as a matter of fact. Probably won't go down this way. What if it was reversed for a change? We've had many Democrats win the popular and lose electoral. Bush, Clinton. I'm sorry, Gore versus Bush, and then Clinton versus Trump. What if Kamala Harris wins the electoral and he wins the popular? Now, let me tell you what would happen. This is my prediction. If that were to happen, that November 5th, November 6th, they would abolish the Electoral College, which is what we want.
That'd be great.
That's the Marcos' secret. We got a secret. We all got secret. So that'd be our little secret. Yeah. Don't worry about that. That's terrible. Oh, yes.
All right. That's on California. We got to ship them a couple million votes in California.
That's right. So If that were to happen, that would be a great thing. Marcos, the next time we talk, it will be election night.
Yeah.
Folks, share this video that you're watching that we're streaming live with. For anybody who's having issues, tell them to watch. The way you deal with your condition is to get out and do the work. Just do the work. And if you're busy, if you stay busy, then you don't worry as much. You know, there's some truth to the old saying, idle hands are the devil's workshop. So don't let the devil increase your
scrolling on Twitter or whatever. It's that's not going to help us win.
So
let's do the work.
So folks, contact KamalaHarris.com, contact any number of places. I'm sure there are even links on Daily Coast where you can volunteer. Black Church Pack, Woke Vote, Until Freedom, Black Voters Matter.
Move on.
Yeah. Poor People's Campaign. These are all of our friends that are giving people an opportunity to do text messaging, phone banking. What you doing tonight? You can have a game on the television and still be working the phones. Mm-hmm. Multitask through the rest of the weekend. Mm-hmm. All right. Please, man. Please, sir. Please do it. And again, tell your friends. Try to get 2 or 3 people to go to the polls with you on Tuesday. So you're going to need a ride, you know. And some of you need to just go on and take off work Tuesday. You know the line's going to be long. Put in for a day off. Take the day. Go vote. Help others. Get inside. All of that. Marcos, thank you, buddy. This is it. DailyCoast.com. Follow ongoing election coverage there. Stay tuned. All these social media.
Also, vote early if you can.
If you still can. Now, in North Carolina, early voting.
So in some places, you can't put it in the mail anymore, but you can. Right. Some places have the drop boxes. So because if you vote early, then you're not standing in line, making it harder for somebody who may have to get back to work to vote.
Early voting ends in some states this weekend. So find that out. I've already early voted here in New York, but we got New York. So I'm not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to be taking up a spot in line. For some, you know, somebody who might be a casual voter and it's like, screw this, I don't have time for this, and then leaves. So let's make those lines shorter.
And can you still hear me, Marcos? I froze.
I can still hear you.
We're wrapping up anyway. I don't know why I'm freezing, but I guess I freeze. Folks, thank you for joining us. DailyCoast.com, MakeItPlain.com. Thanks, Marcos. Have a great week. We'll see you Tuesday.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's finish strong. Leave nothing on a road.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.